Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome to the KE Report weekend show. Shad and Corey here, your hosts for this weekend edition. This weekend show, we're going to be focusing on the commodity sector as commodities still seem to be in the spotlight with very positive moves, especially in the precious metals, but even copper moving higher. Energy has been a bit of a mixed bag, but boy, oh boy, the celebration I think needs to be had for a lot of us holding the precious metal stocks, even the whole way down to the smaller ones, because they are really starting to move. And now the small ones have been moving for about a month's time. Just as a quick note, please, everyone, go back through our website, podcast, and YouTube channel. Just search the KE Report, especially in your podcast player and on YouTube. Subscribe, leave a review, and share with all your friends, as well as check out all our daily editorials and company updates, because there's a lot of them right now. There are a lot of companies doing a lot of work out there and raising a lot of money. We're starting off the show with Brian London, editor of the Gold Newsletter, also our host at the New Orleans Investment Conference this year, November 2nd to 5th. Brian, well, we're going to focus on the precious metals here because gold continues to do well, but even now, silver is outperforming gold. The gold and silver stocks are doing very well across the board. And even some of the smaller companies, the smaller gold and silver stocks, those have really caught a bid and they're raising a lot of money. A lot of them are cashed up right now to a degree that I don't even think they were expecting 6 months ago. So, Brian, broadly, what is catching your eye the most in this clear bull market for precious metals?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think the key thing right now is that the juniors are moving, as you say. A number of people on the social media and on X have been posting charts lately, and it really is a little bit more of a mixed bag than they're presenting, but we've seen that progression that we wanted to see. We had gold moving for the longest time, you know, 14 months or so. We haven't seen the gold stocks or silver respond to that big move in gold. And for the unique reason in the history of gold, in that this gold bull market was spawned and supported by central bank buying, and central banks don't buy mining stocks. They don't buy silver. So they lagged, and they typically leverage a move in gold, sometimes even lead it, but this time they have been lagging it frustratingly. Now we started to see in the first quarter, gold stocks leverage gold. And now we've seen it go down the food chain to where the juniors are starting to outperform the majors in the gold stocks. We're also seeing the silver juniors outperform the larger silver producers, and those silver producers also leveraging silver. And now, of course, literally as we speak, we see a big breakout in silver, and silver finally move above that key resistance level, that level that has stymied us so often of $35. And as we speak, they're doing their best to quash that move, but we're still well above $35. And that's a tremendous breakout.
Yeah, Brian, we've been waiting to see this for a while. The action in the juniors, silver starting to leverage the moves in gold, the silver stocks leveraging the move in silver. So everything is lining up the way you want to see it in a bull market. But it begs the question of how do you think this will play out in a timing perspective? Because it took so long for those stocks to respond, and we can say that there were stocks responding on the way up over the last year and a half. There have been gold producers, best in class, that were moving. Royalty companies were moving. But you know, now that the larger swath of companies is starting to get a bid, are we at the later stage of this? Could this keep running for a while? Is there a danger of it petering out? How are you looking at the longevity of the move?
Well, the timing is always the tough part, and not just when is it going to happen, but for how long will it happen or keep moving. And, you know, I think we have to look at both the fundamental and the technical stories for that. Fundamentally, the primary drivers being de-dollarization, being an oncoming debt crisis, not just in the U.S., but in sovereign nations around the world. That story hasn't changed. And that story, I believe, won't change until there's a fundamental monetary reset that will eventually involve gold. So I think we've got lots of time on that move. And supporting that move will continue to be central bank buying. And now I think investor buying, Western investor buying in the associated investments, the leverage sectors of mining stocks and silver. From a technical standpoint, this move is still early. Roughly speaking, from the lows of 2018 or so, we've about doubled on the silver price. I'm not sure what we are over the last year, but I think it's about 40% on the silver price. In previous bull market runs in silver, and I count three previous bull markets, early 70s, late 70s, and the 2000s, the gold price went up 5.6 to 8.2 times, somewhere in that range. So we have a long way to go in this bull market to duplicate that kind of performance. And I do think this is that kind of a secular, long-term, monetarily based bull market. So we're looking at it somewhere between 6,000, 6,500 to 8,000 or more on the gold price. The question then, again, as you noted, is timing. How long will it take to get there? I hope it's like the 2000s and takes a decade or so to get there, because that means we're going to make an awful lot of money in these junior mining stocks. So here's hoping for a slower but steadier but steady rise continuing in gold and silver and the mining stocks. And I hope we're going to see that, but it's very encouraging again to see silver finally breaking out.
Oh, and I think everyone's encouraged to see their stocks going higher. Our friend Jordan Royburn over at the Daily Gold recently sent out some of his breadth data, and he pointed out that HUI stocks above the 20-day and 50-day moving averages is 100%. The percentage of GDXJ stocks above those moving averages is 96% for both of those. So anyone that bought stock in the last couple months, they're up, but I really think anyone who's bought in the last year is probably doing quite well right now. But Brian, as you were saying, we still need gold to keep moving. I think we still need the majors to keep moving, because what I'm worried about, at least in the near term, and it no way signifies a peak in the market, is that the juniors, some pretty crappy ones, if you ask me, they're running and they're raising a fair bit of money. It's more so that, yes, we're getting this money trickle down from, I think, people that made money in those majors and even the mid tiers that have done really well. But if the juniors play too much catch up, to me, that's a problem, because we're not seeing more money come into the sector. So what are you looking at in terms of the top quality companies? We have less majors around than we did 10, 20 years ago. They're not necessarily spending a lot of money, especially in gold. They seem to be buying copper companies. What do you want to see on the higher level, the better quality companies out there?
Yeah, I think they need to just continue de-risking their projects and making themselves the natural other bidder on their projects, i.e., advancing them toward production. And not just a bluff, but seriously advancing those projects toward production, because the majors have yet to show that they're going to go on buying sprees like they've done in past bull market runs. They seem to believe that discipline is going to stick this time. I have my doubts about that, but for right now, they are not going on these buying sprees. They're not getting involved in bidding wars. And a junior that has a great prospect and has been developing it can just simply proceed toward production. And that makes it a more attractive target eventually, because it's de-risking the project, but it also assures a better price because they could just bring it to production themselves. And a number of them will be able to do that, because one interesting aspect that of this market, and one that I think that's going to develop further, is that money will find its way. There's so much money just sloshing around the world's markets trying to find a home. And as the themes shift from financial and tech toward commodities, you're going to see billions of dollars dedicated to this sector, really big money. And companies, juniors that have large scale projects will be able to raise the money to develop them. The cost of these projects in our minds may seem really high, but for hedge funds and the like out there, it's a rounding error. And when they get involved in the sector, they, I think, are going to be a big source of the large and stupid money coming into the sector. And, God help them. I hope they do it. And we want to sell all of our projects and our portfolios to big, stupid money at big, stupid prices.
That's a great point, Brian. And yeah, it's a good problem to have. We want to hand them the bag when the time is right. But you bring up an interesting point, and let's tug on that thread as far as the path forward for development stage companies. I know that's in your wheelhouse as far as some of these companies that have a lot of banked success. They have ounces delineated, they have economic studies. They have three paths forward. They can build it themselves, they can bring in a JV partner, or they can sell the project. Traditionally, people like the exit strategy of a takeover, but reality is not all these stocks are going to get taken over. So, do you want to see some of these junior explorer developer teams take on the big task of staffing up and bringing in the right team to build a project? Or would you rather see them JV the project? What's your preference?
Well, JV means they don't dilute. I think it's you have to look at it on an individual basis. If a junior is well valued and therefore its cost of capital on an equity basis is fairly low or relatively low, then they can raise the money and advance the projects. We have tended toward favoring JV projects for many years because the share prices of these companies were in the dumps, and it was just too expensive for them to raise the capital to advance a project, too dilutive. And on a debt basis, it didn't make any sense. The money was not there, the metals prices weren't there. Now the metals prices are there. The money is starting to flow into the sector from generalists. So the ability and the favorability of developing a project your own simply on a debt basis can work. And I think that it depends on the project. It depends on the company. You can't look at it on a generic basis, but the option to develop a project is there. And there's the old adage in the sector that juniors explore and mine builders build mines and they don't cross over. But that expertise can be bought. And companies are realizing that they can do that. And you see that happening even at an exploration stage. Some companies are building it or bringing in talent on a mine building basis to position the project for development and de-risk it to attract the major's attention, but also give them that option of developing it themselves.
Hey, the majors I get and these mine builders I get wanting to go ahead and build some of these mines. Some of the generalists, though, mines take a long time to build. There's a lot that can happen over a 2, 3, even 4 year period. We'll see if we get that money flowing in. But to your point about these junior companies, Brian, what about all these small companies right now that they might have a resource or a small resource, let's say an early stage resource, maybe even a PEA on it? And they're talking about starting to mine it on a small scale because they're saying, look at how much money we can make. We can fund our exploration if we can bring this thing into some sort of mining scenario, whether they're toll milling it or whether they're planning on just digging out the easy stuff that is on their ground that they know of. But again, still early stage. What's your thought on these companies?
Well, my advice has been for ages, don't do that because it rarely works. But, we've never had $3,400 gold prices before. We've never had 60, 70% mining margins before for these smaller projects. So it is tempting and it can be done. And I think that landscape has changed dramatically. We're seeing companies like Heliostar, who got in right at the wire and found some producing assets that it was able to acquire for a song, rehabilitate them, and then use that cash flow to fund the development of Ann Arbor. We're seeing more and more companies with that argument. You know, you look at Western Exploration, you know, essentially two great projects in Nevada, one a bit early stage to be going toward a PEA and a pre-feasibility, but they're going that route because they look at that project that's a bit more advanced to provide the cash flow to explore and develop their second project on a much less dilutive basis. It's a strategy that I think is kind of coming into its own at these prices well above $3,000 gold.
Well, Brian, I think that it's very tempting for some of these companies to try to get into early scale production, even bulk samples where they get paid on it. I've seen four or five companies. We had to create a hashtag bulk sample just because there's so many companies discussing it, or like Corey mentioned, doing toll milling to get some early production. Can't blame them for doing that to get a little money in the door in a non-dilutive fashion versus an equity raise. But when you look at the silver stocks, they're not really in the same boat that the gold stocks are. Silver is good at 35, but it would be great at 40 plus. Do you think we'll see more of the same kind of pattern in the silver stocks if silver does finally break into the 40s? Because that would make those projects also attractive to high grade and get into production.
Yeah, it would, you know, silver is a different game, as you know. For projects like the classic high-grade vein-hosted Mexican projects, where typically locals have been mining, you know, not drilling off years of resources ahead of them, but maybe weeks, or even not drilling off resources and just following a vein for literally centuries. Those kinds of projects really sing economically when you get to silver prices, as you say, that would get above $40. So you're going to see more and more of that. Probably, I mean, I've seen it before, and you can just predict that there is going to be a Mexican small-scale silver mining roll-up play emerging very soon. And that might be a great play. It just depends on the management and who's involved and what their experience is. But that's one area where I think, yeah, that model, that paradigm works, could work very well.
Now, Brian, as well as everything's going right now, I do want to look on the downside here in terms of protection for this sector. Corrections are natural even in a bull market. Gold has really not corrected all that much. It's kind of consolidated a lot of these gains. Silver is also hanging easily in the 30s and now looks to be breaking out. But in your eyes, what's a lower gold price that you think the sector is still safe?
Oh, I think the $3,000 is, you know, the one of the things that's happened as this bull market has evolved over the past few months and this year is not that gold touched $3,500, but that the market players, the participants, from the miners to the speculators, have now become comfortable that gold will stay above $3,000 an ounce. Even in this last correction, you had only the most dire predictions were that gold would drop below $3,000 and not much below that. And most of the predictions were around $3,100 on the downside. Once again, gold proved them wrong by not falling as much in the correction as it would have typically or would have done typically in a normal bull market. So I think there's been an awareness that, you know, $3,000 are pretty safe above that, and we're content. We're not watching the price on a daily basis, and the price drops $80, $60, something like that. We're not bent out of shape. It's not that much on a percentage basis, but there's also a feeling that we're going to pop right back up, which we did Monday. You know, this breakout in silver is coming, and we kind of forget the fact already that it's coming after a big breakout in gold on Monday. So, you know, yeah, we kind of have to pinch ourselves and knock on wood. It's looking really bright for gold bugs and silver bugs and mining stock bugs right now. In fact, it would be difficult to imagine that it could look much better unless the Fed suddenly comes out with some some rate cuts. And of course, that might happen as well.
Well, Brian, in light of the environment we're in, where we're clearly in a bull market, the pullbacks in a bull market are more shallow than people are expecting. They don't last as long as people are expecting. Is it possible that the sector has got a little bit of post-traumatic stress disorder here, where we're so used to the rug being pulled out and we're so used to rallies being sold and good news being sold and it being a liquidity event that we're just not prepared for a bull market playbook where people that are waiting for the proverbial pullback may not get it, and they may be stuck chasing. Even companies that are waiting to buy companies and do M&A at a lower price may not see those prices, and they may have to chase some of these stocks higher. Is the danger here people being out of position or being in cash and thinking, I'll just wait for the next pullback, only to see it not come and to see these stocks run away from them?
Yeah, that is a danger. And we're starting to see the FOMO hit, the fear of missing out hit, which is famously rampant at these times in the junior mining stock market. We don't want to see our friends get rich without us. But yeah, the danger here, the risk is not being positioned and not being involved. The risk is being too smart by half and trading in and out of these stocks and missing really big breakouts. I mean, if you look historically, if you look back in the 2000s and look at where average junior mining plays were trading on a share price basis or market cap basis and compare them to where similar stocks are trading today, we're still extraordinarily undervalued. And we have yet to see euphoria hit the sector. We have yet to see prices get crazy in the sector. They have had exceptional moves. I'm looking at my gold newsletter portfolio right now, and our gains are measured typically in the hundreds of percent here. Some quite, extraordinary just this year. But still, compared to where they have been in past cycles, they're a fraction of where they would be. You still have companies with big gold projects, millions of ounces, selling for around $10 an ounce in the ground, where in past markets, those projects were eagerly snapped up by big miners at $150, $200 an ounce in the ground or more. So, yeah, it's still early. It really is.
Yeah, you do also have some stocks trading at $50+ an ounce in the ground. And we have seen some acquisitions come at over $100 an ounce in the ground, too. So, again, this has been a market where the good companies, I think, have really moved first. And now the money's trickling down into the smaller companies. I do still, as I said, want these good companies to keep on running. And I think that separation is good because it shows that even more money's coming into the sector. And when new money comes in, it usually chases some of the better quality stocks and then filters down to the lower ones. But as of right now, a very good week for the precious metals that just continues to tack on gains. And now a lot of juniors joining the party. Hey, Brian, that's what we've been waiting for a while. Let's truly hope that this does have at least a few more years in it. Or who knows, maybe we have seen a generational shift here where commodities are simply more favored over the financial assets that have been favored in some of those tech stocks for decades now. We got to wrap it up here, though, Brian. Again, Brian London, the editor of the Gold Newsletter and our host at the New Orleans Investment Conference, November 2nd to 5th. Click the link in our show notes to learn more about his upcoming conference. Brian, thank you as always for your time.
Thanks, guys. Y'all have a great weekend.
Al Corlin's firm, AB Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.